Hello, everybody, and welcome to Show Hoppers Ripley Season 1, Episode 2, Seven Mercies. I'm Kerr, a little under the weather, joined by my high school science teacher, Mr. Sal.
It's not like that. It's not that. We're not that.
No, yeah, listeners, we are not like that. Because he's my former high school teacher, not my current. My bad.
This is Show Hopper's sick edition.
Yeah, are you sick too?
No, I'm not. I've knocked on some wood here, but no, I am not sick.
You can masquerade being sick.
No, I was using sick as dual meaning because you are sick, but also we are sick.
Yeah, we are sick. We're cool. But I mean, let's just get right into it. What did we rate this episode?
Okay.
Ratings.
Last episode, you originally gave it an 8. You upped it to a 9. Now, before I even give you the rating, you've been reading the book, right?
I have been reading the book.
Are you caught up to the point where this episode ends?
I am beyond caught up.
Okay. All right. So you have a little bit beyond. All right.
Like 10 pages beyond.
Okay. Okay. But you did see these parts in the book. So I'm. I wonder if the book explains some more new. There's a lot of, you know, looking at people, quiet scenes here.
Dare I say
awkwardness. And I wonder how the book illustrates that versus the show and how you feel about that. Really, do you like the book more? Or do you like the showcase of it, or do they add to each other? You gave last episode an 8. You went up to a 9. I think you kept at a 9. I think you really liked this episode. I think you, after reading the book, you looked at it and went, oh, wow. It's still keeping up with the book, just like the last episode did. Basically, shot for shot. Despite the, except for him, I guess.
That's just a complete guess.
Like, it is. I have no idea. I know. It is a shot in the dark.
Okay.
That's my guess. The shot in the dark. I know you like the book.
I love the book.
So
I'll tell you what, on the reread, I still love the book. I haven't read this book in, I mean, it's got to be about 20 years now. Still love it. I think I read the book right after the movie, the Matt Damon movie. I think I keep wanting to call him Matthew Damon. Why? I don't know why. Anyway, I think I read the book right after that came out, and that was, I think, 99. So it's been like 25 years since I read the book, and it's still freaking good. Patricia Highsmith, man, she is fantastic.
What do you think I rated it?
I don't see any reason why you would like this episode less than the previous one. I mean, it's not as much Tom alone, you know, showing, not telling, although they are showing and not telling, just not to the extent they did in the first episode. Certainly more interaction with Dickie this time. I think you loved seeing him start to like impersonate people, Freddie Miles, Dickie Greenleaf, seeing that talent come out. I don't know if I mentioned this in episode one, but the title of the book is not Ripley. It's The Talented Mr. Ripley. So I don't know I think you probably liked seeing that stuff. I think you really liked the stuff with Carlo, this mobster from Naples. I think you are interested in this dynamic, the shifting dynamic between this triangle of Tom, Dickie, and Marge, and how that all shakes out, and seeing Marge get jealous, or maybe not jealous, that's probably not the right word, Marge get distant, and Dickie pulls away from her, and so he tries to go get her back, and then it makes him a little more distant with Tom. I think you liked this episode every bit as much as the first episode, maybe even a little more, but I'll say you stuck with a 9 out of 10.
You got me right, but I actually put it in my notes here that I like it a little less.
Okay.
A little less. Yeah. I like the previous episode a little more. Really, the only reason I like it a little less is it's slower than I thought, which I guess isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I thought in this episode, Tom takes over Dickie. But I think I'm starting to realize that that's not how this story is going to operate, with just him immediately taking over Dickie and then trying to live life as Dickie.
I mean, a lot of the story and a lot of the appeal of Ripley and The Talented Mr. Ripley, the book, the movie, this series, is the dynamic and the shifting dynamic between Tom and Dickie. Because, like, I mean, it clearly at the beginning of this episode, they're like fast friends. They're like loving life with each other. And Tom, you know, you wonder, and it's certainly more clear in the book, like Tom like really wants Dickie's approval, really wants to be Dickie's friend. Like his intentions in the book at the beginning of this episode are not to take over Dickie's life. And his intentions are to be Dickie's best friend and kind of push Marge out of it. But it's a little less clear in series form because you don't have the narrator telling you that. Right. You know, the dynamic is certainly shifting. Marge is an issue. The relationship between Dickie and Marge in the book is more clearly platonic. It's not romantic, at least not at first. And there is a similar situation where Marge does seem to be in love with Dickie. Dickie does not seem to be in love with Marge. The question is constantly called in, just like in this episode, there's a question called as to Tom's sexuality. It's certainly more overt in the movie than it is in the series and in the book. But I really enjoyed this episode. I gave it a 9 out of 10. Actually, probably like this one more than the premiere, because I am so much more interested in the relationship dynamics between Tom, Dickie, and Marge than I am in Tom by himself.
The triangle is very interesting. And something else I want to outline is I'm wavering on whether Marge is for lack of a better word, a scam or two. Last week, after you probed me, I felt that perhaps Marge was also doing what Tom is doing with Dickie, but I feel that a little less. I mean, maybe it's a potential, but I'm falling off that bandwagon. And this episode is also pretty eerie throughout. You know, there's a lot of like uncomfortable, tense like scenes, like Marge when Dickie forgets to go to dinner with Marge.
Yeah,
right.
She Frankie just kinda stares him down
when we meet Frankie, and even like the end
scene. It's Freddie.
Freddie. Yeah. My bad.
Freddie. Yeah. So yeah, I agree. And you know, honestly, I think it's really cool what they do with music in this series, because there are scenes that wouldn't probably seem menacing, but when you listen to the music, it's like, oh wait, there's menace here. Oh, and then you kind of see it. It's like, oh, there's menace here. Oh my goodness. But I'm interested, like, because you haven't had any contact with this IP before this series. And I, you know, to a certain extent, I've kind of spoiled some things for you, but I'd be interested to hear from an unspoiled person just watching the series for the first time, where they think the series is going to be going. Because, I guess it's probably too spoilery for me to, you know, give too much of that away. But
no, So at first glance, with the way last episode ended, I thought, okay. And with the very first scene of the first episode with Tom like dragging away a body, I'm like, okay, so he's gonna take over Dickie's life relatively soon. Like this is like the
6 months, right? Plot.
Yeah, 6 months later. I mean, after this episode, I think now I recognize that it might not be that soon, or maybe it won't even be as I expected, because they're fleshing out Dickie a lot more than I had anticipated, which isn't a bad thing.
So you're assuming that body was Dickie then in the beginning?
Yeah, I guess. I'm not really positive who the body is.
But. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you the movie. No, I'm not going to say any more than that.
All right. Okay.
I'm not going to say any more than that. I am very much enjoying the series. It is quite faithful to the book. I guess the one big difference in this episode is the Carlo stuff and the trying on clothes stuff is flipped in order. But I actually kind of like that they flipped the order here.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, he tries the clothes on, Dickie catches him, and then later he has this run-in with Carlo, which is much less significant in the book than it is in the series here. In the book, he doesn't bring Carlo to the house. He brings Dickie to the restaurant or to the cafe, and Dickie dismisses it pretty quickly. It's not like there's not any menace here. There's not any like perceived danger. It's just Dickie rejecting it, right? Uh-huh. But at that point, he has already seen Tom trying on his clothes, and so he was already kind of annoyed with Tom, and now he's really annoyed with Tom because of this thing. They just flip the order here, and they beef up that Carlo stuff by putting him in the house, which is pretty terrifying, actually.
It is. You know, yeah.
You can see, I mean, he's casing out the Picassos. Like, that's pretty scary. So they put that scene first to kind of put Dickie on edge with Tom. Like, maybe there's something wrong here. You know, he seems like, you guys seem like your besties, right? Like,
this is the company you keep in New York.
Right, exactly. It's to kind of puts Dickie on edge, and then when he sees him in the clothes, now it's, what is this dynamic going to be? He doesn't kick Tom out, and even though Tom offers to leave. So part of Dickie, at least, still wants Tom around, but it's definitely has to have changed now, right? Those are two pretty dramatic instances of that could be inflection points in a relationship.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, the Carlos part's scary, and the clothes trying's a little weird. Little,
that's maybe even scarier, honestly.
Yeah,
we don't know how long he was standing there listening. Was he listening to him talk to, you know, to have the fake conversation with Marge? That's another deviation from the book too. In the book, you know, I don't even want to tell you because I don't want to ruin anything. So I don't want to spoil anything. So that conversation, the fake conversation with Marge, is a little more aggressive in the book. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Well, I mean, we both enjoyed this episode, so I'm glad to hear that. Yep. I'm curious as to what our favorite scenes were.
Favorite scenes.
I have no idea what your favorite scene was for this episode. I'll go with the Carlo scene, because since you've outlined it's different from the book and you like how they changed up the order, you like the Carlo scene here more. It was a pleasant surprise.
Okay. And I'm going to say that you are going with the Tom impersonating Dickie and trying on his clothes.
You got me right. Yes, that is what I went with.
that's what I went with too. I almost went with the Carlo scene. And if you'll allow me to, I'll roll in the clothes trying on with the conversation he has with Dickie afterwards. But I don't think you're going to allow that.
No, I'm not going to allow that.
Because I almost went with that too. But I think seeing him do the impersonation, which was pretty good. I went back, I've watched this episode twice, and watching the scene in the studio, the art studio, having seen Tom's impression of Dickie, I was like, that's pretty good. That's
he's
pretty
talented.
Good impression. He's talented. Yeah, he's a talented guy. Exactly. So, I mean, a lot is made in the book of the fact that they're about the same height, about the same build. They can wear the same clothes. And here's Tom is kind of impersonating his voice and doing it well. And what's nice about this scene too is it gives us a window into Tom's inner thoughts. Like that imaginary conversation with Marge is just chilling.
It's a reminder to me of the first episode, how it ends with him saying, "Hi, you know, I'm Dickie Greenleaf."
Yep.
I mean, his intentions are clear, and part of me is like, how does Dickie excuse this? I don't know what he heard and what he didn't hear.
I know.
But
so that's the thing. If he heard the whole Marge conversation, I don't know how he excuses this. So I'm assuming he didn't. He just sees him wearing the clothes and hears him, you know, doing the impersonation of this is my, what was it, abstract period.
Yeah.
So yeah, that part of it, I think I have to reconcile that in my head that way. Because if he heard the Marge stuff, like, Tom's got to be gone, right?
Something else I wanna note is right before he starts trying on the clothes, it looks like he's using, I think, Dickie's typewriter.
Yes.
And he writes out, like, whatever, the lazy fox, jump, whatever the phrases that use all the letters of the alphabet. And he notices that the E's are a little wonky on the typewriter.
Yes, they're a little raised, I think.
Yeah, so I imagine that's going to come into play later, but happens in the scene, so we'll point that
he
out.
He also did find Tom... Dickie's passport in this scene.
That's true. Yeah, he might need that later.
Mm-hmm. So I like, this is a little different than the book. He strips right down to nothing and puts on Dickie's underwear. Even that is
true. Yeah,
that is a little different from the book. In the book, he keeps his underwear on, but yeah, it's an interesting window into his insights. You know, when he says to Marge, like, "Do you understand anything? You don't understand. Do you understand anything?" Like, he clearly thinks that Marge is I don't know, a simple or stupid or not worth his time, not worth, certainly not worth Dickie's time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a definite jealousy there that he's spending time with Marge. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. And he does, they do, Marge and Dickie do kiss in the book, but it's, Dickie is constantly talking about their relationship as platonic. So even though they are kissing.
Well, I mean, I'm glad we picked the same favorite scene. Like, that must,
we did.
Be, that must be the best scene, period.
I think so. I mean, I did almost pick the Carlo scene. I really liked that beefed up from the book. I did almost pick the scene afterwards with Dickie and Tom talking, but I ultimately went with this one.
I concur. Those are probably the top three scenes.
All right.
All around. All right. Well, let's go look at the Magic Mind moment.
Magic Mind moment.
So, Mr. Sal, where do you think in this episode someone could use some magic mind?
Are you going to let me go first?
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this because I when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is so the Magic Mind moment. Because I've been this guy so many times, and boy, could I use the Magic Mind at that point. Tom has to read this book. It's a travel book. It's a book of poems and words and pictures about this place that he's already living in, written by a woman that he obviously has no respect for and thinks is a simpleton. And oh my God, he hates every second of it. You can see him like writhing in his skin as he's reading it. But there is a moment where he starts to fall asleep as he's reading it.
Yeah.
I am notorious for falling asleep while I read. I have such a hard time staying awake. Even if I'm totally into the book, I have such a hard time staying awake while I read. So Magic Mind, that focus shot that gives you that nice burst of energy, not a burst of energy, it's a really smooth energy lift, under focus lift, is great for that. It's because it gives you, you know, half a cup of coffee's worth of caffeine, but it helps your body absorb it better. So the point is not to get more caffeine from Magic Mind, it's to help your body absorb the caffeine that it does get. Gives it that nice smooth what do we call that? It's not a high, it's not a,
it's a longevity. I mean, it lasts a lot longer.
Yeah.
You, instead of having all the caffeine at once, it kind of gets used up over time, so it's a lot smoother. No crash,
no jitters. And I if I'm Tom, I'm taking some Magic Mind to help me get through that book, because that's going to take some focus and some energy that I don't have.
I can't recall back in like school having to read books I was not interested in. If I'm into a book, it's pretty hard for me to fall asleep. In fact, it might keep me awake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I'm not about a book, like, which is sometimes would happen with an assigned book, it would be so hard to read at night. Oh my goodness. So hard. Yeah. And then you read a page and then you forget what you read and it's like, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. What did I just read? I'm not even really reading right now.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, I have my own Magic Mind moment here. Now,
what do they
call the coffee they're drinking nonstop? A cafe? Is that the place where they go to drink it?
Well, so when he says un café pour Tom, that just means a coffee for Tom.
Yeah, okay.
But I think – so I don't know that they really necessarily call it anything in the series. In the book, they drink Americanos a lot, which is like half espresso, half water, I think.
Yep.
And then in the book, it's also there's a big deal that Dickie has an espresso maker, but he's really picky about how it works and who uses it and how that it's clean and so forth. So it's possible that they're drinking espresso. If Dickie made it, if Dickie didn't make it, it's probably not. It's probably just regular coffee or Americano.
I'm just going to go call it coffee, but it might be Americano. It might be espresso, but they drink it so much in the series. Like, oh, stop.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Italian culture, but oh, yep. My goodness. So my Magic Mind moment is going to have to be the Carlos, Dickie, and Tom scene, mostly because, well, first and foremost, Tom and Carlos just met drinking coffee.
Yes,
and
they
And now we're back at Dickie's place, and they're having more coffee, and they're having coffee so much throughout the day. I mean, this is outrageous. Like, it's not good.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, your body gets used to it. You know, it's homeostasis, so you can't have this much coffee. They must need to run on it. So I mean, I used to drink a lot of coffee, but now I don't because I use Magic Mind. I'll drink a coffee before work, put some Magic Mind in it. It's great. Love it.
Yeah.
So I can't believe that they were having this much caffeine. It's crazy to me. It should really
not go. Necessary.
Not necessary. Have some Magic Mind and lower the caffeine content. I mean, maybe have some decaf if you really like the, if you just like enjoying it, kind of similar to people having non-alcoholic beer. But I don't know, right? They're having way too much. It's a productivity shot, people. It helps you get things done. And it helps with the stress relief. So probably Dickie could have used it here because he's pretty stressed out from Carlos.
I don't blame him. that is
really... Oh, he is a scary guy.
Yeah, like the most pleasant scary guy too. Like
that makes it worse, right? When you're like, it reminds me of like Lalo from Better Call Saul, checking our back.
Oh yes,
yeah, season 6.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, and season 1 Ozark. I forgot the guy's name.
Odell.
Oh, and Dell, and then also Javier too, right?
Nah, Javier is a loose cannon.
Nah,
Dell. I get the Dell. I get the Dell comparison.
We have all of Ozark in our back catalog, and check out Magic Mind. They support the podcast. You can use our link magicmind.com/KNS20 and get 20% off on your order, or up to 56% off your order if you get a subscription. So you can use our promo code at checkout KNS20. It'll be down in the show notes below. And thank you to Magic Mind for supporting the podcast.
Who said it?
All right. It's the falling in a popularity game show, but that's with any game show, right? Like, they can't be at the top forever. I know in recent time we've talked about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, not on the podcast, I think, but that's falling off. The game shows, they come and they go.
They do.
So, Who Said It? It's in its twilight times. It's probably going to get retired soon as a segment.
Mm-hmm.
You just agree to that? Yep.
Retired just on this end. On the other end, it will never be retired. I will happily
keep the
quiz you.
The torch will be kept lit. So, all right. I've got three quotes. You got potential for 3 points, Mr. Sale. We'll start it off.
I'm dead.
Why are you dead?
I just know I'm dead. Like, I was trying to think of some quotes from this episode. I was like, I don't remember any quotes from this episode. Anyway,
the issue with picking the quotes is that half the time they're speaking Italian, which I'm not gonna do the Italian. So you're already that's got like half the quotes I can't do.
Fantastic.
And I don't believe in giving you like the translated quote because that's not fair.
Okay,
like that's not fair.
All right, I've done that to you.
I know you have, and I felt that's not fair. But...
I've given you sign language quotes. I've given you written quotes.
Yep. But whatever.
All right. Okay.
First quote, I have a confession to make.
Oh, I know this one. Okay, this is Tom very, very early in the episode. Maybe the second scene in the episode, he goes to see Dickie. So it's obviously been a little bit because Dickie says, oh, you're still here. And Tom says, I have some things I wanted to give that I need to give you. And Dickie's very confused. And Tom says, I have a confession to make. Your father sent me here to try to get you to come back. So there you go.
Yes, spot on. I basically consider it the very first scene. We see Tom. It looks like he's planned it. Right as Marge is leaving, he comes in. And he also does bring back the nice pen. Dickie's pen.
Yes, that's true. Inconspicuously, yes. Yeah. I will say there's a pretty big deal made in the book about Tom trying to be alone with Dickie and just really trying to avoid Marge. I don't know if it comes across as well in the series or not, but he really is actively trying to be alone with Dickie away from Marge.
I see that.
Okay.
See that. I supposed to hear in the first scene.
Yeah.
And then when he... the Carlos thing is interesting to me, though, because is it him trying to be alone with Dickie, or is this like, I don't know, or is this just the company he keeps in, so that's why he brought Carlos? So the Carlos one is...
That is more like Tom trying to get Dickie's blood going. He feels like if he can like show Dickie a good time, Dickie will be more inclined to hang out with him and less inclined to hang out with Marge.
So he wants to get a trip to Paris. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you're one for one. And you beat all two right. for two.
Well, hold on. I want to talk more about that scene, though.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
So this is a really important scene because this is one of the biggest deviations from the first episode. In the first episode, he says nothing about his parents, right? Nothing at all.
No, yeah. He almost slips up.
So he almost slips up. He almost does. Okay, and so this is a big surprise to Dickie. So in the book, he does talk about Dickie's parents and says that he met them and he knows them. And he tells him about the stuff, the shirts, the robe, the socks, all that. Well, I guess there are shirts in the series. There's socks in the book. Anyway, he tells them that he has all this stuff right from the get-go. But he never tells Dickie that he was sent here by his father to coax him home. Okay. He holds that in his pocket and it's a desperation move. Like he feels like he hands over the stuff to Dickie and then he's like, crap, that's the last time I'm ever going to see him. I'm done. This is it. I failed. I can't get this guy to hang out with me. I can't get him to come home. I'm screwed. I got one more card to play. And that is, by the way, your dad sent me here. And that's the end that he needed. It gets Dickie like kind of laughing about it, and they get kind of this common, not enemy, but a common like butt of the joke, right?
Yeah. And I mean, they're both similar in the sense that they both took an opportunity to explore as Dickie puts
exactly. It. So here in the series, this scene is really important because this is there's no reason for Dickie to ever want to hang out with Tom again. There's no reason for this relationship to continue at all. So he's playing this card in the hopes that that's the end he needs. And it turns out that it is, because it does get Dickie like wanting to hang out with him so that they can make fun of his father. The other thing I want to point out about this scene, or maybe this spills into the next scene where he does give him the clothes and Dickie says, I don't know how to tell my mother that all the best shirts there are imported from here. but Dickie like pans the robe. He makes fun of it. And that's the robe that Tom picked. Dickie's mother did not pick that robe. Tom picked that robe.
Is this robe going to be a pain point here?
I mean, I don't know if it's a pain point, but it certainly put like was a kind of a barb at Tom that Dickie didn't know he was sending.
Yeah.
So it is a hurt. Like there's a hurt there that Tom feels because Dickie said this.
All right. Yeah. Fair. Well, this is a very important scene. That's very correct. I mean, this is what starts their friendship.
Yeah. So,
can I ask in the book how the friendship starts?
Mm-hmm. No, it's like this.
Oh. Okay.
Except the only difference is that the order of operations. He has already handed all the stuff over. He's already told Dickie that he knows his parents. But the only thing Dickie doesn't know is that his parents sent him to try to get him home.
Okay.
So it's very much like this. Tom, in a desperation move, throws this out there and hopes that they get this common butt of the joke to make fun of, and it works.
Ah, yes, the gambit, the parrot gambit. Worked out for Tom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, I keep saying, I will say, like, I don't want to sound like a book expert. I'm not an expert on this book, but
I would say you are. You're reading it right now.
I am reading it for the second time right now. But one of the things that I really like is that you know what's going on in his head at all times. So I'm not trying to give anything away here. I don't think I'm spoiling anything. I think the intention is there in the series to show us that this is like a maneuver by Tom to get into Dickie's good graces. But I don't know that it's necessarily obvious. It's there. If you watch it, like it's there. But I want to make sure that like the intentionality is clearly laid out in the book. And I think it's just harder to see, but it's there in the series. So that's why I'm pointing this stuff out.
Oh, very fair. No, I think you're correct. Yeah, because you know, you just see them doing it, but I don't know what he's thinking.
Right. Right.
Okay.
So there that is. It's a desperation move and it works.
You're one for one, Mr. Sal. Do you think you can be two for two? I think you can.
I doubt it. All right. Well, I appreciate the confidence.
Jealous of you?
Hmm.
And now for the second quote.
No, that
was the quote.
Oh, man. So my first reaction is that Tom says this to the imaginary Marge, but that was from our favorite scene, so I don't think it's that. I think it's Dickie who says this to Tom about Marge. I think it happens in the last scene where Tom says that, you know, Marge is jealous, and And Dickie says, jealous of you? So I think that's it.
Ding, 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 ding. Two for
all
two.
All right. Yes. And we get to talk about this scene now. Yes, because this is an exciting scene.
This is a very exciting scene. A very yes. critical point.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yeah. So we already talked a little bit about how Tom is still around. Dickie doesn't kick him out, surprisingly.
He must not have heard everything he was saying.
But I think he did, and that's the issue. I think that he recognizes that Tom is right. Marge does love Dickie more than Dickie loves Marge. And Marge is not someone who Dickie is like enamored with or even would choose over Tom. I believe that Dickie would choose Tom over Marge if they met at the same time. But because they have this year-long history where they were lonely in this place together, he feels obligated to make peace with her instead of Tom, this new guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His good old friend.
Yes, exactly. But and also, obviously, the sexuality being called into question is a big deal, too. It's like, you know, it's kind of hinted at throughout this episode. Earlier in the episode, Tom says, I like girls. in a way that nobody who actually likes girls would ever say it, right? So it's important that it's called into question here that Marge thinks he is gay and that there's at least some suspicion by Dickie that he is. And Dickie wants to make very clear to Tom that he himself is not. Right. I mean, it's obviously a different time. It's a time when it was far more taboo.
Oh, yeah.
To be gay than it is now. So there was a stigma associated with it. It was something that you could be shunned and ostracized for sure. Mm-hmm. So not if not violently beaten up for. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You could potentially be, depending where you are in the world, killed.
Yeah, I mean, now that still happens today. It's just on a much smaller scale now than it was then. It's much more commonplace to be openly gay now. I'm not saying it's more common to be gay because I think it was always pretty common, but it's more common to be openly gay now. So there's that part of it too. There's one other thing that I wanted to mention, but I forgot what it was. Go ahead. There's something else
I want to say about. When Tom is willing to leave, he doesn't want to break up a friendship. Mm-hmm. Dickie doesn't want him to go. He'll just let it go. Mm-hmm. When he leaves, there's that smirk by Tom.
Smirk.
There's a little bit of a smirk. I like that smirk.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
They're coming up, Tom.
Yeah. Because this gets him kind of off the hook, right? I offered to leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said let's let it go. Right.
All right. So, we'll let it go then.
Yeah. Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention was there is a big deal in the book made of his aunt, who he wrote the letter to in the first episode, right? His aunt used to make fun of Tom all the time and suspect him of being gay and call him names in that regard.
Being gay.
Yes. So this is a kind of something that's a bit of a trigger for him because of how cruel his aunt was to him. Uh-huh. To the point where he used to, in the book, his character used to joke at parties that he didn't like men or women, that he was asexual.
All right. Okay.
So.
Seeing that this is a pain point for him, I'm curious. It looks like his aunt has a lot smaller of a role in the show than the book.
Well, I mean, it's not so much flashback. There's not scenes with his aunt in the book. The narrator tells us that, you know, she was cruel. She did this. And, you know, there was this one time that this happened with his aunt and so forth.
It was very, very like, gossipy narrator.
It is a gossipy narrator.
Oh, yeah.
This narrator spills all the tea.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Okay. Well, you're two for two. I'm going to make the third quote harder. This is the veritable difficulty quote.
Oh, boy.
Very nice.
Oh, I want to. My first reaction is that this is Carlo. Yeah, it is. It's Carlo in his apartment. He says, "This is a nice villa, very nice," which is very menacing because I got the impression the whole time he's casing the joint out to come rob it later. But anyway, so am I right about this?
You are correct. That's three for three. Ding ding ding. Yes.
Hey.
Right. Carlo is Yeah, no, that's a freaky sequence of scenes. I mean, it starts with them, just them following Tom.
Yes.
And that was already kind of freaky. And in the first episode, it looked like he was being followed, potentially by the IRS. So is that this? No, it's not. It's, I guess, Naples Mafia. Carlo likes Americans, so he wriggles his way into Dickie's home. Dickie is not glad to hear about that. This 100,000, I forget what the currency is called, lira?
Lira was such a joke. Oh my goodness.
Well, what do you mean?
I went to Italy twice actually before the euro. And lira, it was just like thousands of lira for like $2. I want to say like 1,000 lira was about $1 when I was there, I think. But it was some ridiculous proportion. I was like, this unit is out of whack, man. This is nuts.
Yeah, you gotta have like a denomination then at that point. Yeah. Like 1,000 lira is like a something.
Yeah, just move the decimal. That's all you gotta
exactly,
do.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah, no. Dickie is not into this idea. He's as Carlo puts it, a scaredy cat. He's a bit of a scaredy cat. So Tom and Carlo could do business, you know, leave this guy out of it.
Yeah,
he definitely looks like he's like casing up the joint. Nice villa. Oof.
Yeah.
Something I want to outline here is it brought into my question. Dickie goes, is this the type of company you keep in New York?
Right.
And Tom goes, well, no, I same company as you. That's how we met. And Dickie doesn't remember him. I'm suspicious that Tom Ripley is a stolen identity and that his identity is not really Tom Ripley.
Oh, because Tom doesn't remember meeting Dickie either.
It doesn't seem like it, no. So he gets found. Yeah. He was hard to find by Mr. Greenleaf. Yeah. And, well, the only thing that puts a hole in that is Freddy.
Right.
So, I guess that puts a hole in it. Unless Freddy just remembers the name. Not the face.
I will tell you that Tom, in the book, does remember meeting Dickie, although not at first. It takes him a bit to figure out who he is talking to. Like, it's not until he sees him that he's like, oh, yeah, I did meet this guy.
All right. Okay. So so he is Tom. Well, he went by Tom Ripley.
I'm not saying that. Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. That's right.
But no, so since he's so good at, like, impersonation, it does now, to me, beg the question, like, this is his first time taking over, like, an identity?
I don't know.
Talented Tom.
I don't know. I mean, we did spend a large chunk of the first episode seeing him pretend to be, you know, a collection agent. And I mean, those are just anonymous people, not specific people, but this is a little different if that's the road he chooses to go down.
It's not a far stretch.
It's not.
All right, well, good job there, Mr. Sal.
Thank you. I'm excited that I got 3 out of 3 on that. Woo.
Yeah, you thought you were dead in the water.
I did.
But let's see. I think last week, I think everyone could agree that my title, my different title was better. But let's see.
I loved mine last week. I thought it was so good.
Let's see what we did it for this week.
Titles transform.
Okay, before we share our own titles, let's just talk about the episode's title, Seven Mercies. After looking it up, I mean, that's the painting from, I forgot his name now, the artist that was on the run.
Forgot his name too. Started with a C.
It was long.
Okay. It was Italian.
Yes. But okay, that's what the episode title. Oh, you did not. Oh, so what did you think? What did you think the title was then?
No idea. Dickie shows him a mercy at the end. Like,
letting
him stay.
I looked it up and the painting's called The Seven Works of Mercy, and it's that painting that they look at before we see the Freddy scene.
Do you know the seven corporal works of mercy?
No.
I know some of them. I don't know if I know all of them, but I'll tell you who the ones that I do know.
Okay.
Okay, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, give drink to the thirsty, visit those in prison, comfort the dying, I think is one. I don't think I'm right. Did you look them up?
Actually, I have them right here. It's feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, welcome strangers, clothe the naked, care for the sick, visit the prisoners, bury the dead.
Okay, so I had four for sure. One iffy one, and then I missed two. So, yeah. Yeah, those are the corporal works of mercy. It's a Catholic thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's So I mean, how did you feel about this title? I was kind of lukewarm on it. Unless
I was ready to panic completely because I was like, I have no idea what that title is. But it's good to know that it is the title of the painting. And now that actually I appreciate that painting more and the story that goes along with it, with the artist painting it while he was on the run because he was on the run for having murdered a man. So that's a pretty cool story.
That's a through line. So what did you your time.
Oh, you want me to go?
I want you to go first this time. Yeah.
Okay. What does that say? Oh yeah, yeah. No. I had five possible titles.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, but I'm only gonna I can give you as many as you want, but the one that I'm going with, I am committing to one.
Yeah.
Okay?
What's your title here?
Kindred Spirits.
Okay. Why is that your
Kindred
title?
Spirits? Okay. In the Carlo scene. Uh-huh. Where Carlo's in the apartment, Dickie accuses Tom of he and Carlo being kindred spirits. You seemed like you were kindred spirits. Like, are those the type of people you hang out with? So now, Tom is not entirely on the up and up here. Okay, he's clearly he is a crook. We've seen him be a crook.
Yeah,
right. This guy is a kindred spirit with Tom. So that the fact that Dickie recognizes that is significant, I think. But then. You can also kind of bend that a bit to the last scene where, you know, Tom accuses Marge of being jealous of them because of the bond they have, because they seem to be kindred spirits, right? Mm-hmm. But Dickie disagrees, of course, but doesn't let him go, doesn't say you gotta go. So maybe to a certain extent, Tom and Dickie are kindred spirits. So that's my title. I like that one. I think it's way better than Seven Mercies.
Well, let's see how you feel about mine then. My title would be I'm a painter.
Okay.
And so here, and I got four real things to cite here. Number one, throughout episode one and episode two here, Dickie has a love for painting, right? Yet he's kind of mediocre. We get the scene where he shows his art gallery to
it's my Marge Tom. Section.
It's a lot. It's Zubak vibes in the regime. if listeners saw that, if not, we covered the miniseries The Regime, and
the series is flawed. It was never not entertaining, though. It was always entertaining.
There was a lot of funny moments, and it was a very funny moment.
It's not a complete waste of time watching it, but man, just in that scene in episode 5 of that series, oh man, it's funny. You gotta see that.
Yeah, and I'm sure you could relate to it in some ways, but so we have that. All right, so that Dickie calls himself a painter, but we also get both Marge and Reddy citing the fact that they're kind of doing something in the arts. Marge writing a book / photographer, and Freddy is a playwright. Although Tom doesn't,
he's a fraud. He's not really a playwright.
He kind of feels that they're all frauds, whether he says it or not. Right, like the way Dickie's paintings are, he doesn't like Marge's writings and. He says he's a fraud outright about Freddy. So it's kind of in the vein of that. So Dickie even kind of cites, hey, oh, why am I a fraud? Like, am I a fraud? Yeah. And I at least get the sensation that Tom's lying to him, but maybe he's not. Maybe the friendship is closer than I
Well, he doesn't say, no, you're not. He just says, you and Freddy couldn't be more different. That doesn't mean that he's not also a fraud. It just means that Dickie is more relatable, or Dickie is better looking, or it could mean anything. But it just means he's different from Freddy. They could still both be frauds.
Talking a little bit more about Freddy. I mean, do you want to talk about Freddy at all? Like,
I do. Oh, before this is over, we got to talk about Freddy.
Okay. We can save that. We can save that then. But then the last thing I'll cite is obviously when Tom's rehearsing. His lines as Dickie, he cites the fact that he's a painter. You know, he says, I'm a painter.
That's right.
So I feel like the term I'm a painter is used throughout. Painting might be a theme, or at least the arts in some way. I thought about saying something like that, but I feel like I'm a painter is more on the nose, especially for this episode.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I did actually, a couple of the ones that I decided not to go with are painting related. I had Blue Period and Abstract Period as possible titles.
Oh, so I did like one of your reject picks, is what you're saying.
yes, basically.
Okay. All right.
no, I like it. I think it's good. I think it's definitely a better title than Seven Mercies.
Do you think probably it's better than your title?
No, I think Kindred Spirits is better.
Well, I like
we got to do something. More. We got to have kind of some kind of poll with our listeners or something. We should. Email us and tell us. Who's got the better title here? Kindred Spirits or I'm a Painter?
Showuperspodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. Yes. But I would love for listeners to chime in on this. I really would love this.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, what your title ideas are.
Good idea.
All right. Well,
hey, you know what? If we like them, we'll talk about them in our recap, maybe. Maybe. That's not a promise because we're recording these episodes pretty far in advance of when we drop them. So
yeah, very fair. All right, well, let's chat about a few things of the episode. The Freddy situation here.
Yeah, Freddy's an important character. Freddy in the movie is played by the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I mean, one of my favorites of all time. And played really well in the movie, by the way. I don't love the movie. The movie's not... I don't think the movie's a very good adaptation of the book. I think this is a much better adaptation of the book. Uh-huh. But one of the things I do love about that movie is Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's great. But Freddy's an important character. What did you pick up about Freddy? Because I don't want to give anything away necessarily.
I mean, Freddy, I'm so suspicious of all these people are taking advantage of Dickie in his life. I'm suspicious of Marge and I'm suspicious of Freddy. Although Freddy seems to come for money. So... Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't have any real need to take advantage of Dickie. I mean, he seems suspicious. He seems to have Tom pegged, like, spot on.
What do you mean?
I think he thinks Tom is trying to swindle Dickie in some way. Or
gotcha.
I mean, he seems pretty confident that he's met Tom before, even though Tom refutes it. And he even, like, cites it correctly. In episode one, did Tom... Hell, Dickie, he met him at Delancey's?
No, he just...
Okay, all right.
I don't know. I don't think he told him where.
Okay, well, but Freddie is spot on that it was Delancey's, okay. Apparently.
Bob Delancey, by the way, is Tom's roommate in the book. That's the person he's living with or has been living with for about a month when he decides to take this task on.
Okay, all right. Well, he refutes all claims of this. You know,
right.
No, I mean, I think Freddy's on to him.
Okay. Suspicious of him. Yeah. So, and Freddy, in the book, you don't get much more of Freddy than this. This is about what you get of Freddy so far. Like, but we're going to get more of Freddy. So don't forget about him because he is an important character. And I think, you know, keep that in mind that you think that he's suspicious of Tom. I don't want to give too much away yet. So,
okay.
So I don't want to say any more than that, but you have pegged an important character.
All right. Okay. Something else I want to chat about is when Dickie forgets to go to dinner with Marge.
You know what? Before we get to that, because this relates to Freddy, let me just chime in on one other thing. When he pays for the taxi for the girl who's on the ground.
Yes.
Okay. Tom is convinced that this is a scam.
Yes.
That she and the taxi driver are splitting the money right now. And this is very different in the book. So I don't have anything to draw from the book about this. There is this scene in the book, but it's not so clearly a scam. It's like they actually drive her where she needs to go in the taxi and so forth. And it's a little bit bigger than this scene. But I like this because Tom calls attention to the fact that Dickie is easily swindled, right? So you had just mentioned this about Freddy, that Freddy might think that Tom is trying to take advantage of Dickie.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of reputation Dickie has with other people, but in Tom's estimation, Dickie is easy to swindle.
Yeah, no, you're right. Especially by the looks of how he just gave like all his money. This taxi driver.
Yes, exactly. So, all right. So, yes, let's talk about the scene where Marge is late, comes in and says, "Hey, kids, what's for dinner?"
Fine.
That's a reference to Severance, Irving. B.
Check out, we have season one. Season two will be coming out at some point.
Yes, it will be. It will be.
The thing I want to note about this scene is, well, it's a, you know, it shows how close Dickie and Tom are that he kind of forgot all, yeah. He kind of stood Marge up by accident. But the other thing I want to ask is to you more specifically, which is,
all right,
not that you've been like stood up, but like, have you ever, not mm-hmm. like in a date sense, but have you ever like gone, made plans with someone back in the day and then like they just didn't show up? And like, there's not, I feel like this would not happen in today's day and age because I would just call or text them.
Like, hey. So there was this one time, I do want to tell this story actually, because there was this one time where I logged into our recording studio to record a podcast, uh-huh. and there was nobody on the other end for a while. I waited for about an hour. Uh-huh. I texted my co-host. I called my co-host.
Yes.
No
yes.
response. So,
oh, wow.
So
jeez.
I think it does happen this time.
Oh, jeez, man, that's rough. Well, I'm glad I'm your co-host though, Mr. Sal.
Oh, good thing it's you now, and not that other deadbeat.
Yeah, well, deadbeat. Wait a second. Listen, sometimes a nap turns into a full-on sleep, and
I get it.
And things happen, but
you could have used some magic mind that day. I get it.
Oh wait, me. I mean, yeah, yeah. The
oh yeah,
co-host.
It was. That's right. It was you. Oh, that's right.
Oh come on. Why you gotta throw me out like that? But yeah, it's fair.
But yes, it did happen a lot that like we didn't have cell phones, so like you had to make plans and you had to stick to those plans. If you didn't stick to those plans, like there was no way to get a hold of the person to tell them, you know, something came up or anything like that.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Like if you don't have a cell phone, like, and I go out, like, I mean. Unless you're home and I get to a payphone and I call your house, I got no way to contact you.
Exactly.
That's scary.
Yeah, right before I got a cell phone, I had a friend who like was on my case to get a cell phone because it kept happening. Like, not me. I wouldn't change plans, but he had more stuff going on, and so he had to change plans sometimes. He's like, "Will you please just get a cell phone?" So I finally did, but that was back in 2000.
No, I can't. Yeah, I can't. I can't really see life without a cell phone. I mean, I can obviously I can think of it, but mm-hmm. it's just so nice.
It's one of the things I really like about watching series where there are no cell phones. It's like, oh man, this is pretty cool. Like that. That's a scene that wouldn't happen with a cell phone.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Because communicate. I mean, we talked about this in Lost. Actually, I think you pointed mm-hmm. out how if they just communicated better, some of their problems would be resolved.
Exactly.
We have the whole. Series of that I've lost
all
six
it,
seasons
yeah.
in our back catalog. Check that out. So I guess the only thing I can relate to that is when I was like, I guess Severance kind of does this where, you know, I remember being in elementary school and like a kid wouldn't come to school and we could only speculate mm-hmm. as to why, or like they wouldn't be around for something and none of us have a cell phone, so we don't know why they're not there
yeah
or anything, and then we just have to speculate, similar to when the Severed employees take time off, or if they're not in work for the day, they're innies, as they say in Severance. Don't know where they are. So check that out.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, what other scenes do you want to go over?
You know, those are the ones that I felt like we needed to talk about.
Then I'll throw in one more then.
Okay.
Quick, which is just to state this, that Tom has Dickie's account numbers for what it seems like his bank.
Oh, yeah. It's important.
And it looks like, Ermelda? Is that her name?
Ermelinda.
Ermelinda. Looks mm-hmm. like catches him in the act.
Yeah. I think so. I wonder how much of that was her catching him in the act and how much of it was just to make sure that we knew she was leaving, so that when he tries his clothes on, we're not like, oh, she's going to walk in on him.
Well, they kind of make a point of zooming in on what he's holding.
Yeah.
I feel
he
like
he doesn't hide it or anything.
You're right. So maybe she just thinks that's his bank statements. Like, it's probably too far to read. Yeah,
I don't think it's nothing. I think you're right to key in on it. I just don't. I don't know what they'll do with it. I actually don't, because I don't remember from the book what happens with that. Uh-huh. So I can't even speculate on it.
Don't even know. Okay, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then if that's everything we want to go over for the episode, let's check the time.
All right. Oh, it is TV time.
Ain't no time like a TV time. Immediately, I think the people at TV Time gave this a 5.
I'm going to say they gave it a 4.
Okay.
They did give it a 5, 56%, which is higher than episode 1. That was only 47%. So, all right. Yeah.
You got the trend line wrong there, Mr. Sell.
I guess I do. I guess there's still 0% on one star, which is good. I was just worried with this series that people might find it boring, that people might find it to be too slow or something. Which, I mean, I don't. I'm enthralled by this. I think it's visually interesting enough to hold people's attention through the parts where there's no talking and no action, because there's a lot of it. There's a lot of no talking, no action. So,
yeah. No, anyway. Very mundane.
I wouldn't call it mundane, but actually, the percentage of people who labeled this as boring dropped from 5% to 3%. So that's all good.
Right. Well, maybe they also just hopped off the bandwagon too.
That could be too. All right. So favorite characters, I think the people said Tom, and I think you said Tom.
Yeah, I think the people said Tom, and you said Tom.
Yeah, of course.
It's named after him, right? Like Dexter. You know, check out Dexter Newblood in her back catalog. It's hard to overtake the character that the series is named after. Mrs. Davis.
Yep.
Other one?
No. Mrs. Davis wasn't even a votable character.
Oh, you're right. Actually, I forgot the main character's name.
Simone is the main character. Simone,
thank you. Yeah, my bad. Yes. A bad example.
But no, you're right. He is the default setting, and he is at 87% here. I think it's going to take something substantial to get off of Tom. I mean, every scene we get is from his perspective. He's in every scene. Have we had a scene yet that didn't have him in it?
Huh. No, I don't think we
have.
I
don't think we have. So, yeah. Talk about somebody carrying a series. I mean, the Andrew Scott is all over this one.
Oh, yeah. We love Moriarty.
Yeah.
Check out BBC
I've never seen
Sherlock.
I've never seen it.
I liked it. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I guess that's everything. Do you know next week's title?
You know what? Do I know next week's title? I thought I wrote it down, but
I do not know how to pronounce it very well. It's Somerso,
I think.
Somerso, okay.
And actually, if I could just interject about the title, Somerso, do you know what that means in Italian?
Nope.
It means submerged.
Okay.
So we know that Tom does not like water. Uh-huh. We know that his parents died in water. And if you remember, the very opening shot of this episode was a dream sequence with the seagulls, and then the camera drops underwater.
Emerged. So someone's going to drown? I wonder. I don't think anyone's going to drown, but a curiosity. All right. Well, that'll be next week. Hopefully that's not a hard title to beat. I think we could top that without even seeing the episode.
I think we're good. I think somebody's got to hire us to create titles. We're good at this.
Well, maybe you could hire us, listener. You could reach out to us, showuperspodcast@gmail.com. We have an extensive back catalog. Check it out. Please, you know, leave us a review, subscribe, 5-star reviews. We really do appreciate it. Share the podcast. And we'll be back next week for episode 3, Somerso.
Shoe hammer some show hoppers into your day.